Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:30 p.m. and today is July 7th. And I thought we'd kick off with 10-year Treasuries. They're right in the region of the 200-day moving average, so it's a bit of a do-or-die moment for bond investors. Are they willing to continue to buy? And what kind of credence are they giving to the results of the Fed minutes, where you have this clear intention that they do want to begin tapering, but they're not putting a date on it, and the USA is probably going to be one of the last countries to begin tapering. When we can think about what's happening in Australia, Canada, and in the EU, they're all thinking about tapering, and they're already starting. But one thing that I find particularly interesting is that despite the fact that you have countries that are all talking about tapering their assistance, and emerging markets that are already raising interest rates, we're still seeing the dollar strengthen. So there's something else going on. It's not simply about interest rate differentials. It's not just about the quantity of money being printed, because the USA is still printing plenty of additional new cash, and there's a lot of it sloshing around. One thing that Zoltan Pozsar has been talking about in the financial media is that the Federal Reserve is siphoning money out of the money markets by offering a 5 basis point return on the reverse repo facility. Then they are attracting upwards of $1 trillion. So that's deposits coming out of banks and into the RRP facility. So that is in effect taking money out of the financial system, which might be one of the factors that's helping to support the dollar in the short term. But there is an additional point, and it's that the countries that are doing best from the pandemic at present are those that have got among the strongest currencies. So it's simple to think about, for example, the ECB, and that they're going to start tapering, but Europe still has difficulties getting on top of the coronavirus. And I thought this was a particularly interesting graphic, where we can see that the vaccination rate is along the horizontal, and then the growth rate is along the vertical. So we can see that the UK and the USA, Germany and Spain are sort of up here in the upper right hand quadrant, and then there are other countries that are not as far advanced in their vaccinations and are lower down on the growth horizon. So this also then speaks to where we have relative strength in currencies. So Australia is got somewhat higher growth but way behind in vaccinating the population and has been able to avoid the majority of difficulties. So the currency is now right in the region of the trend mean, but it's there's a distinct absence of upward dynamics. So we still have a tailwind for the dollar over, or the US dollar overall. And the US dollar also looks like it's about to break its downtrend against the Canadian dollar, where we have had some dynamic moves over the course of the last couple of days. And this particularly stands out when we look at it on the weekly chart. And Canada, again, is one of the countries that's furthest along in their plans to normalize policy. And countries like Canada and Australia also have rampant speculation in their property markets to deal with. And their property market trends are much more advanced than around the world, because they didn't really experience significant downdrafts during the global financial crisis 13 years ago. So the price and the leverage ratios that we have in the housing markets in those countries is much greater than it is in other places. And that is probably also factoring into decisions about how and when to normalize policy. Well, against this background, where there is a lot of movement going on in the currency markets, gold continues to rebound. and it has not been up in a dynamic manner, but it is up for 6 consecutive days. And we have to go back to May to see the last time it's been able to string together a number of days on the upside. And at least in the short term, it is comfortingly holding the move above the $1,800 area. There is an increasing possibility that this is a higher reaction low. I personally would be a lot happier if it can sustain this move above the $1,800 area. But if it's a higher reaction low and the low put in last week holds, well, then we're coming out the other end of what has been a rather deep correction in the gold price overall. So then let's just think or take a step back and think about what's going on. Countries are beginning to talk about normalizing policy. So they are looking at economic growth, they're looking at the massive quantity of debt that's outstanding, and they're thinking about how on earth they're going to unwind these excesses. So they're first going to taper, then they're going to raise interest rates. And they're going to be very reluctant to raise interest rates until growth and inflation are trending higher in a dynamic manner. They would much prefer to have negative real interest rates. They would much prefer to have interest, or at least interest rates coming in or below the prevailing inflation rate, and for growth to also be higher than the prevailing inflation rate, but most particularly above their interest rate. So in that regard, they can grow the economy and erode the debt. And of course, they don't have that right now. And they are certainly thinking about this pop in inflation. So we've had a pop in inflation, and some of those inflationary pressures are moderating. We've had a profound decline in lumber prices, and lumber was a little steadier in here today, and or at least over the last few days. When we look at this just on a daily basis, it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner yesterday and then wasn't able to hold its gain in here today. Then oil prices had a large downside key reversal yesterday, and we then saw some downside follow through in here today. When we look at gas prices in the UK, they are also now coming back down. We had a very large downward dynamic yesterday and then downside follow through by the close in here today. If we look at this, the intraday chart, we can see that the early strength in the market was completely eroded by the end of the session. So what this is also translating to is some downward pressure on carbon credits within Europe, because they do tend to act in a high beta manner relative to oil prices. Of course, what this is also beginning to price in is that the initial spurt to demand and growth in commodities has in many respects run its course, because some of the supply bottlenecks are starting to free up. So that's helping to moderate prices. Then you also have the fact that China has opened up its state reserves for copper, aluminium, and steel and coal. So they're trying to bring prices down. But the one thing that is, I think, less remarked upon is companies like Toyota. I think veteran investors, they'll be familiar with the old story about the massive stockpile of steel and copper that Ford had built up. There was a time when the automotive companies were some of the biggest commodity traders, and they maintained massive stockpiles of industrial resources to ensure that they were hedging themselves against inflationary pressures. So then Toyota got a big shock during the Fukushima disaster and the tsunamis. So they started to migrate away from just-in-time manufacturing, and they started holding more inventory. So they were insulated from the supply chain problems that have affected just about every other automotive company. And it's allowed them to continue to grow their to grow their business, and they overtook GM as the number one seller of vehicles in the USA in the first quarter of this year. And that's a I guess that is a title that GM have held for years. And the reason that that's possible is because Toyota has been holding more inventory. And they've been trying to hold about 4 months of inventory since over the course of the last few years, and that is now starting to pay dividends. So when a company is going through difficulties and their competitors are sailing through those difficulties because of a strategy they adopted, well, then it is going to encourage all of the other companies to do the same thing. So it's quite likely that we're going to have an inventory build in the automotive sector, and it will not just be about semiconductors. And that would suggest that as we look at what the supply bottlenecks are, well, copper is definitely a supply bottleneck because every automotive company, having had the example, and I guess the reason that we can be confident that they're going to start building inventories is because of what happened with Tesla. Tesla was able to build an electric vehicle that people actually wanted to buy. And then, because it was able to sell carbon credits, it was effectively getting its competitors to fund its expansion. So now they are all also building electric vehicles themselves. This is a massive new source of demand for copper and nickel and cobalt, so and manganese. So what this is representing is the basis for an inventory build, because there's a shortage of these metals and there's likely to be a significant deficit. So that would suggest that we're going to see a natural buy on the dip from the commercial side of the industrial resources sector. What that would suggest is that copper is unlikely to pull back below the trend mean. At any time it starts to approach that level, well, then we're going to start to see some demand starting to come back in, and I think that that's what we're seeing right now. So I think that's rather important. I'm also posting a video in comment of the day today for Extend, and I believe that CAE Inc. owns that company. And it's a really wonderful video where you've had the conservation arm of the Israeli government twinning up with the armed forces and rescuing a rare vulture, basically by flying a drone in and very sensitively dropping off packages of food for the chick. But it's the nature of the flight path and how that drone is being piloted is particularly interesting, because they believe that they can train someone to pilot a drone with a great deal of accuracy within 30 seconds. So the ease of use for these kinds of tools is incredibly profound. The accuracy of movement that they can fly in incredibly tight spaces at high speeds is also particularly interesting. Of course, there are clear military aspects to this kind of technology, but it's going to be also particularly, I think, important for autonomous vehicles. And when we then think about, well, what is it that Amazon is doing? Well, they're certainly experimenting with delivery by drone, and they'll likely be incorporating autonomy into those flying drones, because it's just untenable to have a person piloting all of them. Of course, that is something that is out there in the horizon. But one thing we can be sure of is that it is easier to develop autonomous vehicles that fly rather than drive, because there are a lot fewer obstacles. And then in the defense sector, it's a lot easier to develop drones that kill people because it's a lot easier not to kill them. Or it's a lot easier than not killing them, I should say. So we are certainly seeing that there's a lot of innovation going on in both autonomy and then also control systems. And then this is also particularly beneficial for companies that pretty much do both. So Intuitive Surgical continues to power ahead, and the good part of the reason for that is because it's probably going to be one of the companies that benefits most from the rollout of 5G. If one looks at the history of the company, it was originally pioneered by the US military so that they would not have to put doctors in harm's way. And the ideal scenario was that they would have doctors at home and field hospitals on the front line, and that surgeries could be performed by robot remotely. Well, it's impossible to do that without 5G because of lag, and you can't have lag if you're operating in real time. And the number one thing that 5G gets rid of is lag. So gamers are going to love it, but the real world applications for real time connectivity are profound, not just in the military sphere, but also in the healthcare sphere. So these are certainly innovative portions of the economy that are obviously going to be influenced by interest rates, but also then represent key innovations. So in the big picture audio last Friday, I spoke about the ways that companies innovate, and obviously the hardest one is innovating based upon developing something completely new. So this is also another good example of 5G creating a lot of excitement in the financial media, but it is likely to be companies that use it that benefit most. And this, I think, is an example of one of those types of companies. So then we can think about the cryptocurrency markets. Are the primary ways to eventually benefit from the networks that are being created today going to be by investing in the networks? Or are they going to be from investing in the apps built upon the networks? Because we don't have those yet. The vast majority of the development is going into the cryptocurrencies, and there is no delineation between the token and the service provided. But eventually there will be. And then it will be a question of how does one invest in those apps? Will it only be possible through buying the individual token, or will it be possible to do so via the conventional financial system? And this is one of the primary questions. So Ethereum continues to bounce, but certainly the size of the bounce is modest, and there's been a distinct absence of upward dynamics, and the link with Bitcoin has not been severed. So Bitcoin prices were a little steadier in here today, but they're very locked in this range, and the amplitude of the range is tightening. So we're going to get an explosive breakout in the not so distant future, because when the amplitude of a range comes in, it suggests that there are people that are dropping their offers into the range, and they're not willing to wait for an additional rally before selling. And there are people raising their bids because they're not willing to wait for a deeper decline. So we're starting to see a thinning out of supply above and demand below the market. And when those vacuums are punctured, then it's going to contribute to a breakout. Now, if that breakout is on the upside, then it should take us through the 40,000 level in a day, and that would certainly encourage people back into the market, and it would suck people in on a momentum basis. On the other hand, if the price breaks down, it would take us below 30,000 and probably in a single day, and then you would have some capitulation, and the people that were buying would have stops triggered, and the people hoping for higher prices would have an incentive to let go of their inventory. So this is an interesting juncture that we're at here because the price has more than halved. And we're hovering here around the 35,000 level. So the big question for investors is what happens next? And the price has been going sideways for sufficiently long that eventually we're going to get a breakout. And that breakout is likely to be dynamic and the beginning of a new trend, whether up or down. But the bigger questions residing around the future of the cryptocurrency markets, I think those are still very woolly. And obviously, there are some extremely strident views on both sides of this argument, but we have not yet seen the killer app that makes the case for why one needs cryptocurrencies really compelling. Obviously, there are plenty of people who feel like they need it because of the returns on offer, but that's not quite the same thing as a technological breakthrough and a must-have application. When we think about, and I want to come back to currencies because we've certainly seen that the countries where there are flare-ups of the Delta variant are certainly seeing their currencies weaken. So the Philippine peso has now, or the dollar has clearly broken its downtrend against the Philippine peso. The Korean won is also weakening, and they are not quite yet on top of their recent breakout, and they're still lagging behind in terms of the speed of vaccinations. But then we can think about India, where they had the spike from the Delta variant, and then it came straight back down again. So the Nifty index was in positive territory again in here today. When we then think about the performance of the MSCI Emerging Markets Index, it was in negative territory, and it continues to pause here. And the reason for that is simple enough. It's very much to do with what happens in China, and it is looking increasingly likely that the Chinese are going to close the loophole to companies listing outside of China. Of course, Tencent isn't one of those, and it is still pulling backwards. So it's not just about the absence of a potential pool of liquidity in the US. It's also about the very real threat that companies that rely on data and have been data dependent or have data dependent business models are seeing that that data is being commoditized, and then its ownership and rights to it are being acquired by the central government. So the route to growth for these companies has now been cut off. And we're accustomed to buying growth with the expectation that companies can continue to grow indefinitely and that they can come up with new innovative solutions to problems and create value and out of nowhere, and that is the reason that you can justify paying a high valuation. But if a growth company doesn't grow, well, then it has to be given a value-oriented valuation. And an estimated PE of 30 is still an aggressive multiple. And when we think about the price-to-sales ratio, well, it's trading at 8.5, which again is aggressive. It's not quite the same thing when we think about extraordinarily large companies like Apple, which is pushing on to new closing highs in here at present and has come through this process of consolidation over the last 10 months with flying colors. It has a lower price to sales ratio than Tencent, and it does not have the prospect of aggressive counter growth strategies coming through from the government. Obviously, there is talk about antitrust, and it's likely that we will see some additional measures towards antitrust, but they're going to be nowhere near the kind of government appropriation that's going on in China. So the only way to invest in China is in the kinds of sectors that have got an explicit badge of support, or the imprimatur of support from the central government. And that would suggest that everything else is fair game for selling. So that is likely to put downward pressure on the emerging markets index. And then we have the continued strength of the dollar against the background of continued spread of the coronavirus in the emerging markets. I think India is a great example of the fact that these things do not last indefinitely, and that even when it is a more contagious variant, then it will flare out eventually, and we will get back to looking more at a normal foreign exchange market where the clear intention of emerging markets and commodity producers to taper early and begin their normalization cycle ahead of the US should support their currencies, but probably not until after we get over the hump of the Delta variant. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.